the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 641. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today by guest co-host Simone Alexander. You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, if it's on theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
Heater, want a TV set and more. A big old house like this one, but everything new. Where can't nobody ever tell me what to do.
It is Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. On the show today, we have Austin Shakespeare and their Bollywood 12th Night. And of course, we'll have news and views of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Boston, and Atlanta, Georgia. Stay with us.
And I'll live in my house, and I'll live in my house by myself.
Okay, that was from Caroline or Change, called I Hate the Bus. Simone Alexander, are you there?
I am.
You are. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air. This is your first time to co-host, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so excited about it.
Not half as excited as I am. So I'm going to talk about this show right now, and then we're going to get into some of the other meat of the show. But that was from Caroline or Change, which just opened on Broadway last week. I believe it was last Wednesday night. So it's and since we pre-recorded, we were not able to get it on the show. Are you familiar with Caroline or Change, Simone?
You know, I've heard of it, obviously, as theater goers, theater people do, but not super familiar with it.
Okay, well, it's this is a revival. It opened in 2003. It tells, well, I'll just read this little blurb. Caroline Thibodeau is a black woman working as a maid for a Jewish family in 1963 Louisiana as the civil rights movement is transforming America. This is from Pulitzer Prize winner Tony Kushner and Tony Award winner Jeanine Tesori. The show, it says, pulses with urgency and passion that's shaping the world today. So it really talks about this upper middle class. It's actually talking a lot about the relationship between Jews and the black community. And it's very interesting. It was really a huge hit in 2003. It was all set to come back right before the pandemic. I mean, it was one of the people that got hit up right as the pandemic was coming in. But it did open last Wednesday at Studio 54, and this is a roundabout theater company. Simone, I don't know if you know it. Have you ever seen the website, Did They Like It? It used to be called Did He Like It?
Oh, no, I haven't. Is that a review website?
It is a review website. It's an aggregate website. It used to be, prior to the pandemic, and when Ben Brantley was the New York Times reviewer, it was all about Ben Brantley. And so now it's an aggregate of lots of different critics. And the specifically, there are four critics that represent people of color and different communities that are actually the Did They Like It critics. So we think that's a really good thing. In this case, this had five thumbs up and one thumbs down. Everybody liked it, really, except for the exception of one person, which we'll talk about. Jesse Green reviewed it for the New York Times. And what's funny is Nicole was going to be on the show. I've never seen Caroline or Change, so I don't know if this is a for the revival or if it's written in the script, but I think it's written in the script where there are appliances that are characters. Like in this case, the washing machine is played by Erica Jackson. The dryer is played by Kevin McAllister. The sexy radio is played by Nasia Thomas, Naya, and Harper Miles. And then, oh my God, I can't read my own writing. It's a moon. Serene Moon is played by Nkenge. And then later on, there's a bus that is voiced by someone. So I was hoping to Nicole could share with us, because she saw the original, whether that was in the original.
I do think it's in the original. I'm like looking it up right now.
Oh, good.
I'm so intrigued.
So this is the show's set is set on a turntable, and this is when she's talking to her. The things that she deals with every day in this white household, which are all these appliances. And she has set to basically work very closely with the son, which I believe the character's name is Noah, and his mother had just died. And she becomes, for him, a surrogate mom, but she really doesn't want to have anything to do with that. So there's sort of, a lot of stuff around the relationship of this wealthy white household and the not as wealthy black people that work there. There is one part where the all the white characters who are at this, in theory, and I'm using air quotes here, at the center of the story are in the center, and there's a turntable going around them, and the black characters are basically surrounding them, and Jesse Green says, though the whites are literally centered the image, nonetheless decenters whiteness, with the black characters often obscuring them. So the original actor in this was Tanya Pinkins. In this version, Caroline is played by, oh my God, can I, I've got a, oh my God, her last
Karen
name is Clark.
Clark.
Yes, thank
Please.
You.
Uh-huh.
Say the name again.
Sharon D. Clark.
Sharon D. Clark, who gets an amazing performance. She won the Olivier Award in London for this same, because this is a London transfer.
Uh-huh.
Now the I got to get his name. I don't have his name. His name isn't here. It's the critic for Did They Like It? Did not like this. And I believe, I'm guessing, he doesn't like it because he really loved the original, and this evidently is very different. But he says, and I quote, "As directed by Michael Longhurst, this West End transfer has been deprived of all urgency and bite. When arguments rear their heads, rather than speed into them with the breath of life, the pacing becomes lodgy as the actors begin to articulate each word over emphatically so that all nuance is lost. It is almost as if Longhurst does not trust the audience to recognize the obvious abuse of unequal power dynamics that is literally throughout the script." And he does go on to say later, "Carolina Change is my favorite musical in the world. Seeing this original production changed my life by showing me that it is possible to push beyond traditional theatrical renderings of the inner lives of black people to show us in all our complexities rather than demanding that we be perfect heroes." So it's really still something that I would really love to see.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'm super interested.
And the music is really good, and I'm going to see if it tells us when. I believe it plays through January. It closes January 9th at Studio 54. And
that's a short run. Got to get myself to New York.
Me too. Now, there's another show that's called, a lot of the shows that we are talking about here highlight a lot of the black people in America. And this next one is Twilight. Oh, you know, I'm trying to use my the touchpad, but it's not connected. Twilight 1992 by Anna Deavere Smith, which is playing at the Signature Center. This was a one-woman play about the aftermath of the Rodney King beatings. And it's now playing off-Broadway at the Pershing Square Signature Center. And instead of her doing it as a one-person show, as she does a lot of her shows, this is done by five people doing all the roles. Have you seen a lot of Anna Deavere Smith, Simone?
I love Anna Deavere Smith. She's such a powerful artist.
She really, really is. I was actually, there was a, I guess it was probably about 10, 12 years ago, Zach had her doing rehearsing, and she had an inviting audience to a work in progress. I forgot which show it ended up being. It might have been Notes from the Field. But she does a lot of real amazing things. And she's well known to the world for TV and her film work as well. So this show, with regards to the reviews, got mixed. Some liked it, some didn't. But I will read what, who wrote this? Is it Jesse Green again? It's Jesse Green, wrote about it. He said, quote, when everyone is embodied by one actor, as was the case when Twilight debuted in Los Angeles in 1993, followed by runs at the Public Theater and on Broadway in 94, the audience is led to a different conclusion. Justice is all or nothing. It can't exist anywhere if it doesn't exist everywhere. Unfortunately, the power of that idea is attenuated in the Signature production directed by Tybee Mauger in this 294-seat Irene Diamond Auditorium as part of Smith's multi-year residency at the theater. Twilight has been staged as an ensemble piece, the roles divvied up among five actors. Smith has also revised the script heavily, most in the ways that support the casting at the expense of the drama. So he says it's not as dramatic with multiple actors. And I heard in one of my podcasts I listened to that it was originally going to be done by one black man, and then they changed it to five people.
I mean, I will agree. I've seen different versions of Anna Deavere Smith's work where they do split up the actors, and I almost always find it less powerful than when it's a single actor.
Yeah, and they did that with Notes on the Field just recently, mm-hmm. Zach.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, maybe it's her original concept of it being a one-woman show really, like, is where the power is in
yeah.
it.
Maybe you are right. So, but that's Twilight Los Angeles, 1992, the Signature series. Now, this next note I put in actually specifically for Nicole, but I don't know. Are you a fan of Annie at all?
Annie the musical?
Annie the musical.
100%. It's actually the reason I am a musical theater person at all, is because I would just rewatch the original Annie in the room and learn It's a Hard Knot Life, the whole choreography.
Oh my, I'm so pleasantly surprised. Well, what did you think of, you watched the original movie of Annie, I'm guessing is what you meant by the original Annie. Did you see the remake with Will Smith a few years ago, and what did you think of that?
You know, I actually have only seen clips of that one. I haven't seen the full version. I do feel quite bad about that, but maybe because I'm an adult, I haven't gotten the chance to really sink my teeth into that one.
Well, most
but I
people...
have seen...
Oh, sorry?
Oh, I have seen the remake that's like in between the original and this newest one with Dr. McDonald.
Yes. I just actually watched that not too long ago, oh my God, what's his name and what's her name? Bernadette Peters, and I don't know why I get Madeline Kahn and Bernadette Peters mixed up all the time, Tim Curry played Rooster and the other one. Anyway, and so there's a new remake, or not a remake, it's going to be NBC Live, and they just came out with a new trailer. And Tarazi P. Hansen plays Hannigan. The young girl that plays Annie just looks cute as hell. So cute. Yeah, you can find a link to this commercial on offstageonair.com once I post the show, which will be later this afternoon. But it looks like really good. It looks fun to me. I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, they haven't done, you know, the NBC Live things have not, they haven't done really well, in my opinion. So the only live one that I've liked so far is the Jesus Christ Superstar Live, but I don't know that that was NBC. So I'm hoping Annie Live does really, really well. Answer me this. Are you an Into the Woods fan?
You know, I've been in Into the Woods before. I am a fan of it, I think, most times. I'd say 75% of the time.
Well, as you know, it's playing at Zach right now in a 360-degree showing. Actually, I think it's still playing. I saw it. It was very interesting. We talked about it here on the show. But there was a production in England that was at the Old Vic that was canceled. And I don't understand. They never really said why, but what made it interesting to me, it's a Terry Gilliam production. Do you know who Terry Gilliam is?
I don't.
Well, he was part of Monty Python, but he also did these very interesting films like 12 Monkeys, Brazil, very out there, cerebral films. And so I'm interested of what the what a Terry Gilliam Into the Woods would be.
Wow.
And all the Old Vic said was, quote, "The Old Vic and co-producer Scenario 2 have mutually agreed that the production of Into the Woods, scheduled for spring of 2022, will not take place at the Old Vic." And that's all they said.
Bummer. Yeah, the only thing I see is... some staff were unhappy with previous controversial remarks made by the actor.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I need to do a little bit more research on it because I am actually a big fan of Terry Gilliam. And the final thing I want to talk about before we take a very short break is A Strange Loop. Are you familiar with the musical A Strange Loop? It was off Broadway in 2019, I believe.
Yeah, you know, I've been told multiple times that I should look up A Strange Loop because lots of my friends think that I would like that musical, but I myself have not.
Well, it's by Michael R. Jackson. He won the Pulitzer Prize for it. This particular one is directed by Stephen Brackett, choreographed by Raja Feather Kelly, and music directed by Rona Siddiqui. So this is also a Playwrights Horizons production, and it's opening at the Woolly Mammoth in D.C. And let me just write, this is the blurb of what it says here in a Chloe Rabinowitz article on BroadwayWorld.com. Usher is a black queer writer working a job he hates while writing his original musical about a black queer writer working in a job he hates while writing his original musical. This new musical follows the young artist at war with a host of demons, including the punishing thoughts in his head, in an attempt to capture and understand his own strange loop. I remember when they did this in 2019, it seemed just so amazing. Something like I'd really want to see. And Michael R. Jackson has just blown up. He's doing amazing work.
Totally.
Some of the performers in this, Usher is played by Jaquil Spivey, and then original cast members, Atuan Hopper, L. Morgan Lee, John Mitchell Lyles, James Jackson Jr., John Andrew Morrison, Jason Veazey, Christopher Michael Richardson, who is also the understudy for Usher. They're also going to have a whole bunch of post-show talkbacks throughout the run. And I believe, I don't see it here in this article, but I believe they're doing some very affordable ticket options on a weekly basis.
Oh, amazing.
And then, so I said it made its premiere in 2019. So this is coming to Broadway, I guess soon. Not sure when.
Got to make a trip.
We do. So let's take a little tiny break and listen to a little bit of this song from A Strange Loop called Exile in Gayville. And then we'll have some underwrite announcements, and Simone and I will come right back. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Simone. Simone, you there?
Yay.
It's always mysterious when we have someone on the phone. I can't tell whether you're there or not. Do you actually speak?
I love it. It's like being a ninja.
It is. It's Offstage On Air Ninja. Also, there is so much. So Nicole just had to cancel at the last minute, and thankfully Simone came in. Actually, while we have this, you're working on a show right this very second, aren't you, Simone?
I am. I'm working on a show at ACC, Austin Community College, their drama program, and we're working on Iphigenia in Aulis.
What's it called?
Iphigenia in Aulis.
Oh, cool. Tell us about it. What's it about?
You know, the classic Greek tragedy.
Don't I know it? It's my life.
Familiar with, right? I mean, a lot of this production is inspired on our current day situation. We could be living in a Greek tragedy right now with all of the world's, you know, has to throw at us these days.
True.
But this one is super exciting to be in ACC's new space at their Highland campus. So it's been really, really awesome.
So, and this is going to be done virtually. So you're videotaping the production, correct?
Correct. And I believe it will be available on ACC's streaming network in early December.
Well, we don't want to talk too much about it right now because we're going to get you back on the show to specifically talk about that, hopefully with some cast members. And is this your first time to direct for ACC, isn't it?
It is. I had the pleasure of meeting Marcus McCurder, their drama program over the pandemic, and he asked me if I would like to direct.
Yay. Well, no one better. We should say that Simone has her own theater company, New Manifest Theater, which just had a very successful play fest. And she is also working with us over at Ground Floor Theater. Tell folks how they can get information about New Manifest and tell us if you've got anything happening in the near future.
Yeah, of course. So New Manifest, you can look up everything about us on newmanifest.org or on social media at New Manifest Theater. We did just finish our short play festival, but those plays are all still available on our YouTube page. People can check those out. And we're looking forward to announcing 2022 season in the next month or so. So, you know, keep up on all of those social media platforms and you will definitely announcement.
There you go. And I will say also that we haven't talked about it on this show. We have Playfest coming up in just a couple of weeks that New Manifest is participating in, where we'll get to see last year's mini fest.
Totally.
And then Ground Floor Theater is going to be showing Trans Lives, Trans Voices. And there's six or seven other theaters involved. This is all organized through Austin Playhouse and the wonderful Laura Haddock, who's just the hardest working person in show business sometimes.
Truly.
I have to say sometimes, because sometimes you're the most hardest working person in show business.
You know, I'd like to say that I'm inspired by all of ATX Theater to be the hardest working.
Well, wonderful. We're going to talk more about ATX Theater coming up on our second half. But let's move on to Audra McDonald, the megastar on Broadway. She's going to star in the show called The Ohio State Murders on Broadway, written by Adrienne Kennedy, who is 80 years old, and this is her Broadway debut.
Wow.
I know. It's pretty pretty amazing. I don't know much about her, but Audra McDonald plays Suzanne Alexander, who is a black writer who returns to Ohio State University to speak about the violent imagery in her writing. This leads to a larger examination of racism and the impact it has on the USA. It was commissioned by the Great Lakes Theater Festival in 1992, and it premiered in New York in 2007 at theater for a new audience. And she's other plays that she's done have won Obies, which is the Off-Broadways, and that's including Funny House of a Negro, June and Jean in Concert, and Sleep Deprivation Chamber. Can you imagine you have a long career as a playwright, and the first time you get on Broadway, you're 80 years old.
Honestly, I wish I wasn't as surprised about it, but, you know, women being on Broadway, especially women of color, you just don't see it.
True. Yeah, which is a shame. But it looks like an amazing piece, and it's great to have Audra McDonald back on the stage. Along the same lines, this is something I'm surprised I don't know this playwright. She's been around for a long time. Alice Childress, do you know her?
Yes.
So she had a 1955 play that is now being revived called, they just put it, Trouble in Mind. Which was from 1955, which is kind of a meta show. It's about the difficulties of being black in American theater.
Wow.
Do you know the show, Simone?
I don't, but I will say for Alice Childress, on her Wikipedia page, it does say that she's the only African-American woman to have written, produced, and published plays for 4 decades.
Correct. It's funny. There's some misinformation. She had said there was a rumor that it had won the Obie, but it actually didn't. If I'm thinking about the right thing, but yeah, her Wikipedia page is amazing. She died of cancer in 1994, I think. I could be wrong about that.
Wow.
But this play seems pretty amazing. Definitely prescient. It is a comedy drama about an interracial cast rehearsing an anti-lynching play written by a white author and led by a white director. That sounds familiar.
Too familiar.
Yeah. What's interesting things about, she has a friend named Kathy Perkins, who also happens to be the lighting designer for the current show. She was often called ahead of her time. And this is what she had to say about that, which I find is interesting. So this is Kathy Perkins saying this, quote, "She hated the saying ahead of your time. Her thing was that people aren't ahead of their time. They're just choked during their time. They're not allowed to be what they're not allowed to do what they should be doing." I think that's a great quote.
I do too. I mean, so poignant for, I'm sure, so many people's experiences too.
Yep. So it originally opened at the Greenwich Muse Theater in 1955 and only ran for 91 performances. So interestingly enough, she was the ending of the 1955 version. The producers, the white producers, convinced her to change the ending to like wrap it up in a nice, neat, pretty bow for Broadway audiences. And she was young and new and did not fight for herself. And she went ahead and changed the ending. And she said she would never, ever do that again. So the piece that's going to be playing now on Broadway is going to have the original ending.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. At the time, the New York Times praised the play as fresh, lively, and cutting satire, except for the ending. So that seems pretty amazing. I am looking forward to seeing that. Oh, I just got to look at the time. We're running a little late. Let's see what else I want to talk about. Well, the last thing we really talk about right now is Spring Awakening. The original cast is getting together. And how do you feel about Spring Awakening?
Spring Awakening is also one of my favorites. I was obsessed with the original cast. I've actually been part of the show before, too. So definitely a love of mine.
Well, of course, everybody knows. So Jonathan Groff was in it, Lea Michele, Skylar Astin. And they are all getting back together to do a one-night benefit concert on November 15th at 7 p.m. at the Imperial Theater.
Wow.
That looks pretty amazing. So with that, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk to our guests. So as we go off to break, let's listen to Song of Purple Summer, shall we?
Yay!
And all shall fade. The flowers
out around the world. You're listening to
Ooh, shh.
Sugar honey iced tea. Calling out around the world. You're listening to KOOP Hornsby Austin.
That's what we want to do.
That was the cast from Motown, the musical, when they were here with us in studio. So we're going to jump right into our interview with Austin Shakespeare and Bollywood Twelfth Night. And I was unfortunately not able to be there. So I'm going to be listening to this at the same time you guys are. Here it is.
Well, I am alone in the Zoom room, just cruising around. Lisa is out for the moment. And on my journeys and travels, very exciting, I bumped into our Coco host, Ann Ciccolella, and
hello.
The friends of Austin Shakespeare, and hello, welcome.
Hello.
We have in the Zoom box with us today, we have Ann Ciccolella with Austin Shakespeare, Tamil Periasamy, and Michelle Jackson, who you guys are all with Twelfth Night and Austin Shakespeare's upcoming performance. So welcome to the show today. Good to have you. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. So this is an upcoming production this November at the Long Center, and it's Bollywood style, if I am correct here, which is very exciting. So I guess before we get started, Anne, in case someone doesn't know about Twelfth Night, what is Twelfth Night? Who wrote Twelfth Night? Tell us about this Twelfth Night.
So Twelfth Night is a comedy by Shakespeare that has lots of love and romance in it. The term Twelfth Night was a sort of mischievous night. So it's not quite Halloween because it's more after the holiday season of Christmas and New Year's, but we're doing it now. And about 10 years ago, we actually did a production in Zilker Park with our Free Shakespeare in the Park that had this Bollywood theme. We liked it so much. We wanted to bring it back, but we really wanted to get more Middle Eastern, South Asian, North African actors in it. And indeed, we have a number of those actors. And it is just a wonderful story. Tamil plays Orsino the Duke, and he is in love, crazy in love with Michelle, who plays Olivia. And he has a servant who actually is in the Shakespeare tradition, a girl dressed as a boy who has fallen in love with him. And he has some feelings, well, he can tell you more about it, but he has some feelings toward his young servant as well. So that's sort of the tee-off setup.
Excellent. And I was going to ask you about this Bollywood style, how much more you did influence, because I do remember the Shakespeare in the Park and putting that into there, but you kind of answered some of that. So thank you for that. Tamil, why don't you tell us a little bit about your character, who you play? I know Anne touched on it a bit, but why don't you give me your little perception of everything?
All right, yeah. So I play the Duke Orsino. He is the head honcho in Illyria. And this is a town that the protagonist of the show, Viola, gets shipwrecked on. And the Duke Orsino is very, he's in love with the idea of love. He's in love with love. And so at this, when the story opens, he's basically in love with Olivia. This attachment towards the idealization of love goes towards another aristocrat in Illyria, Olivia.
And he probably has the most famous line in the show that opens the show. Why don't you tell them to me?
Yeah, and I start the show with, you know, if music be the food of love, play on. So, yeah, it's a very famous line. And throughout, you know, I'm not obviously don't want to spoil the show, even though it's 400 years old, but Orsino's journey through this play is I guess the best way of putting it is like idealistic as he comes to terms with love. You know, what is love, and you know, what is the idealization of love. And it's really nice, as we've gone through the rehearsal process, what I've really liked is seeing how much he is similar to other characters in the play. Like
interesting. That's an interesting take. Like, yeah, I haven't thought about it that way, but that's interesting.
Yeah, and this is not the first time I've played Orsino, although the last time I played Orsino was over a decade ago, so effectively it's new. But I feel like the last time, and also in other productions of Twelfth Night that I've seen, Orsino always seems to be a different character. And Shakespeare always writes his plays with all the characters, they have something similar. There's a common theme that we can all relate to. And so in this rehearsal process, just everything clicked, and I was like, man, this is so cool. Orsino is a part of the gang after all. So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And Michelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about your character and your whole take on it all?
My character, Olivia, she does everything with a lot of gusto. So she's in mourning. She's like, I'm going to do this for 7 years. Don't talk to me. So whatever she does, I think she does it with so much. She's very impassioned. And so when she falls in love with this servant who has been sent to woo her on Orsino's behalf, she falls madly in love with him. And that's all that matters suddenly, you know, because she's Olivia, and she doesn't, well, the word I was going to use is,
I liked gusto, because I was like, I when you said that, I was like, I like that. I like that way. So when you approach it in the style of Bollywood, do you look at the characters differently than you would say if you did it how it was traditionally done 700 years ago?
Slightly. Honestly, I haven't given it that much thought along those lines.
Yeah. What I would like to say is I don't see this being different from other productions that have been more traditional from, you know, from the shows that I've done. But what's interesting is that it's just like when you're doing the original, as close to original as we possibly can get, it's just changing that up a bit. You know, it's the costumes are different, the flair is different, the colors are different, but the foundation of it stays the same. So it's not, it allows you from the very first scene, the very first monologue, to just jump right into the show and you're not spending a lot of time trying to reacquaint yourself with what's going on in the environment. So doing Bollywood is no different than doing Renaissance. It's just another theme.
That's awesome. And may I say, this play originally had lots of songs in it.
I was going to get to that, and I know this one has a lot of music, and you love to put the music and the jig and the whole kit caboodle in there, which I love and adore. So tell us a little bit about the music in this one.
All I was going to say is Naga Vali, who is an Austin singer-songwriter, and her style is self-described as Eastern soul.
I love it. I do adore her a lot. You've worked with her before.
Yes. So her music is the music that we're using. And some of it she's written especially for us and for this show, which is great. And we also have Prakash Mondrojas, who is our choreographer. And he's got everybody dancing to the beat. Some of it is traditional Bollywood music, very famous pieces. Some of it is more, we have a character we call the Muse who dances, and she does more of the a sweeter music that Nagavalli has written. So we're excited. And Nicole, I didn't want to forget, the first Sunday, we're actually doing a ASL performance, Sign Language. And then those girls are working hard, but our special guest will be Brian Cheslick.
Oh, so, that's exciting.
So Brian taught at the Texas School for the Deaf, and he also started a theater company, Austin Theater. And he'll do the talk back. So after every performance, we have a chat with the actors and the audience, and sometimes we have special guests. So we're excited that Brian can join us.
Brian's a good egg. That's very, very exciting. So I just have quick questions because we're running out of time. Just, I guess, so what is the audience going to expect? What should they expect when they come to see this? Sounds like a good time to me, but I mean, is there anything else?
For me, the Bollywood aspect is very joyful. So there's some silliness in it. You know, there are other characters that are just plain old silly, but some romance for sure. What would you say, Michelle and Tamil?
I think visually pretty stunning.
Mm. Yeah. And I think for those out in the community who have seen Bollywood movies, they will be very surprised to see how Twelfth Night, and nothing has been edited, you know, maybe some lines cut here and there, but nothing has been rewritten, but they'll be very surprised to see how much a Bollywood film matches that of a Shakespeare play and vice versa.
That's really exciting. That's really, really exciting. So I just want to thank you all for coming.
Thanks for having this great show in this time. We need you more than ever. So thanks to Lisa. We miss her, but we're so delighted to have you, Nicole.
We missed her, but this is thanks for coming on. And that was Austin Shakespeare with Bollywood 12th Night, running November 5th through the 21st. You can get more information at the Long Center, and you can get more information at austinshakespeare.org. Thanks to you.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Simone. Hi, Simone.
Hi.
I shall tell people I just got you on the line right at the right very moment. So we had to call you back. So that was a great interview with Austin Shakespeare. And folks, you know that last song that we played is from the musician doing the music at Bollywood 12th Night, and her name is Nagavalli. That song was called Losing Yourself from the album Eastern Soul. So in our last few minutes here on the air, I want to remind folks that the B. Iden Payne Awards celebration is going to be this coming Monday, and you can get information about that by going to the B. Iden Payne website, which I can't think of what it is right off the top of my head. You probably know, Simone.
I feel like it's BIdenPayneAwards.org.
Maybe committee. But you know what? Just Google B. Iden Payne Awards and you'll get it. The award ceremony is so much fun. I plan to be there. Simone, are you going to be there? You're nominated for a few things.
I will definitely be there.
Yep. We have a lot of fun. So the other stuff I want to talk about locally, and Simone mentioned it a little bit earlier today, which is called ATX Theater. We've talked about it here on the show, but I'm going to talk about it again. So ATX Theater is a conglomerate of theater companies, and there's a website now that has listings and auditions and things like that. And actually now I'm using that exclusively to look at what's going on theatrically in Austin right now. Do you use it very much, Simone?
I definitely do, especially just talking to other theaters about what they're doing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I want to also talk about, the other things that you can get on the ATX Theater website. There are profiles of theater companies. I know that Ground Floor Theater was profiled a few months ago, and Hyde Park Theater was profiled. And we've been talking about advocacy and all sorts of stuff. So the ATX Theater is really good. And we would encourage you, when you post things about theater here in Austin, that you use the hashtag ATX Theater. And that's ATX Theater with an R-E, which is the way I like to spell it. Speaking of that, there are many people that believe that the difference between theater with an R-E and theater with an E-R is that the E-R is the building and the R-E is the art form, but that's not actually it. Did you know that?
Oh, I did not know that. I also assumed that.
I mean, I like the idea. I think it's a good thing, but it would be an afterthought. So it's all because of Noah Webster, who wanted to Americanize the English language, and he's the one that changed all the R-E's to E-R's, got lit in like color, got rid of the U and color and all that stuff. And one of the things he tried to change was theater to be ER. And it didn't really completely take on. So that's why it's sort of half and half when you look around.
Interesting, interesting. So now I know who to blame for these things.
Noah Webster, that darn Noah. Can you trust anyone named Noah, really?
I mean, I don't know. I've yet to meet one.
Yep. So the one of the other things that I'd like to highlight here locally is the Austin Puppet Incident, which is going to happen in November. And that is a it's both Glass Half Full and Trouble Puppet Theater Company. And I was hesitating because in the article that I printed, it didn't say the date. So I'm even as we speak going to go to atxtheater.org and I'll get all the information I need right there. Do you are you a fan of puppets?
I am a fan of puppets. I feel like especially in Austin, I've seen some amazing puppetry, and even dabbled in puppetry myself for New Manifest. Our Manifest Mini Festival.
Oh, that's right. This last one. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, and did you work with Carolyn Reck on that?
I did not.
Oh, for some reason, I thought you did. Well, Carolyn Reck is Glass Half Full Theater, as well as the Trouble Puppet Theater Company. And the Austin Public Incident is at the Vortex November 5th and 6th. And I guess you can get information at vortexrep.org or look for Glass Half Full or Trouble Puppet Theater and get information there.
Amazing. So many good things happening this weekend. That and Public Property from, I think that's Salvage Vanguard in Hyde Park, maybe.
Right. It's
super excited for both shows.
Yeah, it's at Pease Park, and that's by Laura McNeil. It looks really interesting, and it's made possible with support from Hyde Park Theater. And it's a 90-minute play written specifically to be performed in Live Oak Meadow Public Park. Amazing. I'd like to get over to see it.
Let's go out and see some theater.
Let's do. I think that's important. The other thing that, and we'll probably try to get them on, Vortex has got some interesting stuff going on. Vortex is just so prolific. It's pretty amazing. They've got a show called Obituary on November 13th that sounds interesting.
And I think that's a one person show as well. I know that they've invested in a few one person shows in this next season that I'm all super excited about.
Yeah, I am of mixed emotions about one person shows, but when they're good, they're really good.
Agreed.
that's my problem. And if they're not, it's difficult to stay. And even the really good ones, I remember seeing, if they're a 2-hour one person show, I kind of get lulled to sleep by the same voice for 2 hours. So it's hard for me to pay attention.
Yeah, I would argue that for most shows that are 2 hours.
Well, and I don't necessarily agree with that, but I hear you. A lot of people are certainly thinking that. But I remember when I went to see The Ferryman, I guess it was just a couple years ago. That was over 3 hours, and you did not feel it. I was terrified because typically a 3 hour show, straight play, it's not going to be. But this one was amazing. I liked it. Well, so finally, let's jump into our favorite part of the show, which is Today in Theater History. There's a lot of stuff going on today. I should say, tell our audience that right now we have 27 Broadway shows open. Dun, da, da, dun.
Wow.
Okay. Let's
ooh,
see.
Ooh, I do miss when Nicole used to do this, so I will do this in her stead.
Okay. Today in theater history. Very good. We're going to start back in 1927. A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's, well, it was actually called, the musical is called A Connecticut Yankee. And it's a Richard Rodgers and Lawrence Hart musical. And it opened in 1927, and that is, of course, based on Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Some of the songs that people will recognize are Thou Swell and On a Desert Island. And then, I don't know this person, William Gaxton, do you know him?
I do not know him.
Me neither. He starred as the Yankee. In 1953, A Trip to Bountiful opened. That's a Horton Foote play. Starred Lillian Gish, Joe Van Fleet, Eva Marie Saint, and Vincent. It's directed by Vincent Donahue. And of course, we had the revival in 2006 that won, I believe, the best revival with Cicely Tyson.
The amazing Cicely Tyson.
And we, that was the year that, I forgot. If Nicole's here, she'd say it. There was a flub, a vocal thub between talking about the trip to the Trip to Bountiful Pippin, I think they called it, because that was the same year that Pippin was in. Anyway, 1960 saw the opening of The Unsinkable Molly Brown's by Meredith Wilson, and starred Tammy Grimes, along with Dori Sherry and Peter Gennaro. And to me, that always means something. My father saw that back, I guess, what was it, 1955? 1960, and would always sing, I Want to Learn to Read and Write. So whenever I hear of Unsinkable Molly Brown, I think of my father.
Oh,
I know. 2004, there was the stage version of the film of White Christmas that opened at San Francisco's Curran Theater with Brian D'Arcy James, amongst others. Are you a White Christmas movie fan or not? It seems to be split.
No, I'm not. I don't love holiday films.
So I guess we're not going to talk Wonderful Life.
No. Mm-mm.
Okay, well then, and then we have just two more. We have Michael Cerveris and Patti LuPone starred in a Sweeney Todd, and a revival of that under the direction of John Doyle. And finally, in 2010, we talked about Jerry Bock, who passed away on this date. He wrote the score to Fiddler on the Roof, among others, as well as The Apple Tree and She Loves Me and Tenderloin. And then finally, one more thing. 2016, Lynn Nottage's Sweat opened off-Broadway at the Public, about factory workers worried about layoffs in their Pennsylvania. And of course, that transferred to Broadway and won the Pulitzer in drama. So that's it for Today in Theater History. Simone, it was so great to have you on the show with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much. This was so much fun.
Well, hopefully we'll do it again. You can check us out on our social medias. Just look for Offstage and On the Air, and look for Simone at newmanifesttheater.org.
Yeah, newmanifest.org.
Newmanifest.org. And then, of course, you can always check out groundfloortheater.org. Texas Music Mixtape is next with Mark Fort, although I believe there is a substitution in for him. You can find all this on our website, offstageonair.com. Simone, once again, thank you so much for playing on the radio with me.
Of course. I hope everybody goes to see some live theater.
Please do, everybody. We love our live theater. We're going to go out with From the Apple Tree in honor of Sheldon Bach. It's called Lady the Tiger, and the apple tree is like three stories weaved together. And when I said Sheldon Bach, I meant Jerry Bach, who passed away on this date. So we will see you next week. Probably Nicole and I, when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, everybody.
Hurry, hurry.
That is not what I meant to play. I'm going to cue up the right thing and we'll play it. Now we'll see you later.
I'll tell you a truth that's hard to swallow. I'll tell you a truth. Oh, listen well. If you